Chapter 42. Abbot Carroll sat soaking up the warm morning sun at the orchard entrance. Folding his paws across his stomach, he smiled at old Fred, sitting across from him at the breakfast buffet table. The ancient hedgehog gatekeeper was chatting away to a bumblebee which had landed on the rim of his beaker.
"Deary me, have you seen the mess those vermin made in my gatehouse? The scrolls, books and parchments scattered about on the floor. One would think a herd of wild beasts had been living there. Well, they have really, haven't they?"
The bee buzzed, vibrating its tiny wings. Fred pointed a bony paw at it.
"Oh, that's easy for you to say, my friend. But the curtains have been ripped, the cupboards flung open, and the bed linen will have to be scrubbed twice before I use it again. Thrice, even."
Carroll reassured his old friend.
"Don't worry so. Stretch your paws and enjoy being outdoors in our own abbey again. We've time aplenty to put everything right, Fred. The remainder of summer and all the autumn."
Form old Dwirl and a crew of his worthies trundled up to the table. The mole tugged his snout in respectful salute.
"Me and my moles have cleaned up all the girt heap of rubble what was blocking the abbey door entrance, sir. It be's ready for use now, after they've scrubbed the woodwork down."
Carroll beamed gratefully at the foremole.
"Well done, Dwell. Come and have some more breakfast. There's lots of it left here. Do help yourselves."
Dwell and his mole crew, needing no second invitation, fell to with a will.
"Thank ye, sir. Much obliged, I'm sure."
Torn and Martha came running across the lawn. The Otacook called out.
"Gangway, make room there, mates. Two more hungry workers coming in for second breakfast."
Carroll indicated two spaces either side of himself.
"Well, what have you two been up to? I haven't seen you since first serving at dawn."
Martha cut herself a slice of fruitcake.
"I'm blocking the windows in Great Hall, Father. Brother Gelf says he's got extra panes in the attic storeroom. The Dibbons have gone up there to sort them out with him."
Form old Dwirl looked up from his mushroom pasty.
"Arr! Baron sent them, they little villains, into the orchard to help with the fruit and berries. They'm like to eat themselves sick afore sundown."
Sister Setiva was next to put in an appearance.
"Oh, you should see the state of yon dormitory. It's no fit for worms to crawl in. I'm going to need some bonny helpers to make it habitable again. Martha, lassie, have you seen the braw badger today?"
The hermaid shook her head.
"No, sister. Last beast to see him was Grandmum Gervel. He took a few scones from the kitchen and hurried off. I wonder where he's gone."
Torren supplied the answer.
"Lanner said he'd sworn to wipe out all the sea rats. A few of them escaped yesterday by the wall gates. I saw him filling up his quiver and waxing that big bow after we left the wall top last night. I thought better of asking him where he was bound."
Martha poured pennycress cordial for the Otacook.
"I don't blame you, mate. Lorna can flare up like lightning. If and when he returns, I won't be pressing him about where he's been. I pity those sea rats, though. If it were me, I'd have let them go. They've learned their lesson, and a hard and bloody one it was, too."
Old Fred spoke to a bowl of oatmeal he was finishing.
"Ah, but Martha isn't him, is she? Big badger warriors like that are different from any beast. If he swore to wipe out all those sea rats, well, that's just what he'll do. Every one of them down to the last rat."
The last rat was, in fact, running for his life out on the western flatlands. His tongue lolled from one side of his mouth as he looked over his shoulder at the distant figure of the avenging giant. Lorna was standing still, a long distance away. The sea rat stopped as well, collapsing in a heap, his limbs wobbling and trembling uncontrollably. Then he bared his stained fangs at the sky and laughed breathlessly.
"Done it! Can't get me no stripe dog out of your range now! I'll skip you, stripe dog!"
The big badger grunted with exertion as he leaned down on the bow, bending it so that he tightened the string by taking another loop around the end of the thick yew wood. He shed his quiver. Going through the arrows, Lorna selected one. Then, holding it to his eye, he peered down the shaft to check that it was straight and true. Spreading both footpaws, Lorna gripped the ground firmly, wetted his upper lip and raised his head to feel which way the breeze was blowing. Satisfied, he looked toward the sea rat, gauging the distance. Then he placed a shaft on his bowstring and drew back. The string was resting against one scarred ear. The bow strained in a mighty arc to its full capacity. After glancing once more at the distant sea rat, Lonnar elevated the bow slightly skyward and let fly. The sea rat rose upright, waving his sword at the tiny figure out on the flatlands.
Outrun you, strip dog! I beat you, didn't I?
A distant blood-curdling cry answered him.
You!
The arrow came like a thunderbolt out of the blue. Lonnar strode out to view his last work of vengeance. Spread-eagled on the coarse grass, the sea rat lay face up. His eyes were wide open, staring at a sun that he would never see again, the long arrow standing out from the centre of his forehead. The badger gazed down at the last wrath of Ragabol's once mighty crew.
No beast can outrun Lonnar Bowstripe's arrow. No beast.
Unstringing the bow, Lonnar placed it lengthways across his broad shoulders, resting his paws on the weapon. Turning his back on the sea rat, he strode east through the high summer midday to Redwall Abbey.